WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now listening to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Monday, October 24th, 2016. Man, oh man, the weekend just flew by. Really can't believe it's already Monday. Back to the grind, right? Back to the grind. A ton to talk about in the sporting world, so we have a jam-packed show, folks. Of course, we will talk about what took place on Saturday night. The Michigan State football team, now losers of five straight games. The bleeding continues, folks. Yes, they went on the road for a night game against Maryland, could not get the job done, and now everyone is questioning whether or not the Spartans will even have a shot at becoming bowl eligible this year. And this week marks rivalry week. That's right, on Saturday afternoon, the Michigan Wolverines come to town, the number two college football team in all the land. Yeah, we'll chat about that. We will also talk about, on a lighter note, the Detroit Lions, that's right, the Honolulu Blue, streaking at three straight dubs. And Matthew Stafford at the center of that conversation, folks. Can you believe it? He is put on the Superman cape time after time after time. And he did that against the Washington Redskins on Sunday. We'll chat about Matty Staff. You don't want to miss that. And also, we will invite our current sports former PA, Jason Ruff, to the show. Jason, of course, a beat reporter and host at Impact 89 FM and also a color commentator for the Big Ten Network Student U. Jay Ruff will give us an update on what took place with Tom Anastas and the MSU hockey team against the number six hockey squad in the nation, Denver, as they came to town. So all of that and so much more. If you want to be a part of our airwaves, you know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. But hey, you know how we start this party. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. All right, folks, last night was a thrilling one for many mid-Michigan teams as they all crowded around the television to tune in to Fox Sports Detroit and learn their playoff fates. Over the next few weeks, 21 Lansing area high schools will be competing in the high school football playoffs. Exciting times, folks, with the ultimate goal, of course, winning the state championship and getting to play at Ford Field. Some of the teams include East Lansing, Lansing Sexton, Grand Ledge, defending Division VI state champs Ithaca, and even three teams that had a 5-4 record this year who squeaked in, in Williamston, Olivet, and Stockbridge. Now, the first round kicks off this Friday at 7 p.m. Good luck to all of our local teams. We will be previewing a few of those games as the week proceeds here on Current Sports. Michigan is up to number two in the latest Associated Press college football poll following Ohio State's loss to Penn State. Michigan handed Illinois with ease, 41-8 this past weekend, and will travel to East Lansing on Saturday for a showdown against the Spartans. Now, Ohio State, with the loss to PSU, dropped to number six in the poll following that loss and will look to regain their winning form again against Northwestern. Finally, the Western Michigan Broncos. They remain at 20 in the poll with a 45-31 win over EMU Eastern and will try to stay undefeated on the year when they travel to Ball State next week. Great news concerning a former local Lansing area baller, former Michigan State three-point specialist, Bryn Forbes, and product of Lansing Sexton High School, has officially made the San Antonio Spurs roster after an impressive preseason performance. Forbes went undrafted in June, but was picked up by the Spurs organization, where he averaged 9.5 points and shot almost 60% from the three-point line across six preseason games. That's unconscious, folks. All right, after a rough opening weekend, the Spartan hockey team returned to East Lansing for their home opening series against number 6 Denver. The Spartans lost 2-1 on Friday night and were beaten again Saturday by a score of 3-1. Both Ed Minnie and John Letheman got starts and performed well, but the lack of offense cost the Spartans as they couldn't overcome the 2-goal deficits they faced in both games. Now, while the young Spartans looked vastly improved from their opening weekend, they are still winless on the year, sitting at 0-4, and will try to finally find the win column this Friday when they invite Princeton to Munn Ice Arena. We will have a preview of that matchup as well as a brief synopsis on how the year has gone thus far for MSU hockey as we will invite, again, Jason Ruff to the show. So stay tuned for that. It was senior day at DeMartin Stadium on Saturday of the number 20th ranked MSU men's soccer team, but the team had another reason to celebrate. After their 2-1 dub over Northwestern, the Spartans finished the home portion of the year undefeated. MSU has an 11-3-1 overall record and are second in the Big Ten with a record of 4-2-1. Now, the team has had two road games to close out the year, one on Tuesday against number 4 Notre Dame, and MSU's final game will take place on Sunday against number 7 Indiana. The MSU women's soccer team also celebrated their senior day on Saturday with their last home game, and they also celebrated a big victory. Now, the women's Spartans beat number 16 Penn State 3-1, giving Penn State their first Big Ten loss of the year. With this win, the Spartans improved to 6-10-1 overall and 3-7-0 in the Big Ten. The Spartans will close out their season on the road against Purdue Wednesday at 7 p.m. The number 11 MSU women's volleyball team were upset 3-0 against number 19 OSU on Saturday. This puts the team at 17-5 overall and 6-4 in the Big Ten Conference. The team has a pair of road games this weekend to kick off the second half of Big Ten play. They will take on Indiana on Friday and Purdue on Saturday. As always, the Detroit Lions really make it entertaining. Down 17-13 in the fourth quarter, as former Spartan quarterback Kirk Cousins ran 19 yards into the end zone to give the Redskins the lead with 1:05 remaining, the Lions' offense went back on the field, had all three timeouts, and Matthew Stafford proved once again that he really is a next-level quarterback. Now, with 16 seconds to spare, Stafford threads an 18-yard pass between a linebacker and a corner to connect with Anquan Boldin for the game-winning touchdown that put the Lions up 20-17.
Stafford completes to Boldin to the end zone. Touchdown! Anquan Boldin!
How hot was that, right, folks? The Lions have now won 3 straight games. Are you kidding me? And look to make it 4 when they head to Houston on Sunday to take on the Texans. And the World Series matchup is set after the Chicago Cubs took game 6 from the L.A. Dodgers.
Left side. Out. The Cubs have won the pennant.
Are you kidding me, folks? Tomorrow night in Cleveland, game 1 of the World Series will kick off at 8:08 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and the two teams with the longest World Series droughts will square off. That's right, for one team, that drought will end. The Cubs have garnered attention from their long drought dating back to 1908, but the second longest drought in baseball is held by the Cleveland Indians, who haven't claimed the title since 1948. Cleveland has announced that the ball will be in the hand of their ace, Corey Kluber, while the Cubs have yet to name an official starter. Excitement from fan bases is high, but getting in won't be cheap, with the cheapest standing room ticket costing $670 and 2-star hotels, not 4 or 5-star, folks, 2-star hotels in Cleveland currently running at $775 a night, up substantially from their standard, get this, $89 a night rate. That's crazy, all right? I'm not paying $775 to stay a night in the Chi, all right? Well, in Cleveland, either one of those towns, it's nuts. All right, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Our phone lines are open, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com @KRSports, or even tweet us at @WKAR_sports or @AlMartinWKAR. Without further ado, so much to talk about in so little time. So let's stop wasting it. Here we go.
Back. Not a football team. There is no going back down the road. You cannot hit reset. It's not a computer game. This is real life. It's real tackling, real blocking, real catching the ball, those type of things. So, you know, have Michigan coming in next weekend. Got to get ourselves ready to play an outstanding football game if we are looking forward to have a chance.
Yeah, that's how we start this afternoon's Current Sports. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the show, ladies and gents, boys and girls. I am your host, Al Martin. Now, for all of the Spartan fans out there, despite, of course, the Michigan State football loss, I really hope you had a great weekend. I hope the Lions picked you up just a little bit over the weekend. But we got to start the show by talking about your beloved Spartans. Michigan State, now losers of 5 straight games. I'm stunned. I can't believe that I'm uttering those words here on our airwaves. 5 straight losses. Stunning, shocking. No one saw this coming. And if you say that you did today, you're lying. Nobody saw this coming. Nobody but the man upstairs, folks. First time MSU has lost five straight games dating back to when I was 1 year old, 1991. And the first time that Michigan State has started 0-4 in Big Ten conference play since Muddy Waters was coaching this football team back in the day. So we are seeing historic lows now for this team. And the next logical question to come after that is why? Why is Michigan State so bad this year? How has this happened so quickly? A year removed from Texas competing in the college football playoff. In the midst of names like Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma. Three teams actually that are still ranked in the Associated Press Top 25. Michigan State has no hope in cracking that poll the rest of this year. Just a year ago, folks. Mind-boggling. Mind-boggling to say the least. So let's try to answer that question as we begin today's show. And I want you to try and answer it as well. Help a brother out here, because I'm just as confused as many of us out here. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Get this, Michigan State, on the defensive end of the football, MSU has played six true freshmen on defense on Saturday. Very, very young. And at the very beginning of that montage you just heard, at the very beginning of it, you heard a moment that sets the tone. They set the tone of failure for the rest of that game for Michigan State. Riley Bulla, one of the three captains for this Michigan State team. Riley Bulla, a man who has been injured most of this year and who looked to return in 100% form against Maryland. Riley Bulla, he was reckless at the very beginning of that game, for lack of better terms. Three personal fouls that accounted for a total of 45 yards. And then we saw the later of those three, which resulted in a targeting penalty. And the rule in college football, if you target, you're gone, you're done. So Riley Bulla was ejected in the first quarter of that game. So I mentioned the true freshman, right? Michigan State had to burn the red shirt of yet another freshie, Joe Bocci. Joe Bocci has to come in and try to alleviate the pain, some of the pain of losing a name and a force like Riley Bulla. And I thought for the most part of the game, Joe Bocci did a solid job, considering the circumstances, okay? I must say that. But that's a tall order. It's been a tall order all year for this Michigan State football team to have to go so young. Now, I get it. In recent history, we've seen that next man up mentality, right? That the next man up mentality. If a starting Spartan goes down, or someone else for that matter goes down, Michigan State has plugged and played very well. Where a man comes off the bench and just steps up and does his job. It's one thing if that happens a few times. But it's another when your entire team is riddled with youth like this. Crazy. I mean, again, six true freshmen on defense for MSU this past weekend. Nine in total. We saw nine in total against Maryland on Saturday. I mean, what do you expect? What do you expect? And heck, you talk about injuries. Tyler O'Connor, who I think the general consensus now is that he is the best out of the three quarterbacks we've seen this year. Did not start, though, against Maryland because he had an injured ankle. So Brian Lewerke had to come in at starting quarterback for Michigan State. Now, overall, if I had to grade Lewerke's performance, I would give Brian Lewerke a B. He didn't blow your socks off, but there were a few plays you said, okay, that was pretty nice. But you know a play that really stands out to me, and this, again, is the product of playing a young quarterback. You're going to have to go through growing pains. Brian Lewerke had Donnie Corley on an easy slant route. And if Donnie Corley catches that football, there is nothing but grass in front of him. That's a touchdown. That's six. Easily. Lewerke threw it at his feet. I couldn't believe it. I had to go back on my DVR and really look at the play. And I said, oh my goodness, that is a touchdown right there. And Donnie Corley has been the victim of that a few times this year. If you going back to, you know, Tyler O'Connor has missed Donnie Corley a few times on wide open passes, a few that could have been easy touchdown. So, but, you know, again, growing, and I do think if Tyler O'Connor plays in that game, I don't think Tyler O'Connor is missing that throw to Donnie Corley. He's already blown it a few times at the beginning of this year. I think Tyler O'Connor has learned his lesson. We've seen his pains grow a bit, okay? And then this is the moment that really got me, though. That kind of puts in perspective just how desperate this Michigan State football team is right now. Just how desperate they are in searching for some sort of jumpstart to breathe some life into this Spartan squad. Mark D'Antonio decided to go for a fake field goal right before halftime. It was a 46-yarder from Michael Geiger that Geiger had a great opportunity to put through the uprights and to take three and to give the Spartans a bit of momentum going into halftime. Mark D'Antonio decided to say, you know what, this is a classic case of doing too much. When you are sometimes in a situation like this, where you've lost four straight games and your team isn't clicking, you are trying to do something that gives them a jolt of energy that just wakes them up. And Mark D'Antonio thought this was an opportune moment to do this. It was the wrong thing to do. Goes for a fake field goal. It totally fails, and Michigan State doesn't get any points out of that drive, and they head into halftime still searching for answers. And the defense, that Michigan State defense, folks, on Maryland's four touchdown drives, two of which occurred in the money quarter in the fourth. Michigan State has had a problem all year when it comes to the fourth quarter in stopping teams, stopping opposing offenses. Get this, Maryland, on those four touchdown drives, get a load of these numbers. A 96-yarder, a 96-yard drive, a 90-yarder, a 75-yarder, and an 82-yarder. Those are long touchdown drives in which the defense is on its back heels, in which the defense cannot figure out what the opposition is doing, blown assignments everywhere. I mean, how about that last touchdown where Demetrius Cox, you know, I guess just some miscommunication. You can't have that if you're a veteran player, especially if you're a captain. You just can't have blown assignments like that. Ball thrown over, right over Demetrius Cox's head. I guess he thought he had some protection in back of him. That wasn't the case. And touchdown, Terrapins. This is ugly right now, folks. It really is. And now, you look at the rest of this schedule. U of M comes to town this Saturday. You've seen what U of M has done this year. Completely dominant, right? Now, again, to play devil's advocate here for those who are high on U of M right now, I still don't think that U of M has been tested yet this year, okay? This was the game of Michigan's schedule that you are really going to sit back and say, okay, we will really find out who U of M is when they play the Spartans late October at Spartan Stadium in a hostile environment. But that isn't the case right now. Right now, I saw the betting line open in favor of Michigan as 18-point favorites to beat Michigan State. Well, that line quickly moved up a few hours after that to 21. And I guarantee that I still think that's too light. Again, that's three touchdowns. I think by the end of this week, we may see that line pushed up into the 30s, folks. And I would not be surprised. I think 21 is still a bit too light with the way Michigan State is playing right now. But you play U of M this week. Then MSU goes on the road to play Illinois. Then they go back home to play back-to-back weeks in which they're at home against Rutgers and Ohio State. Then they finish the year on the road at Penn State. This is a Michigan State football team that only has 2 wins on the year. You got to get 6 to become bowl eligible. Where do you find your 4? I don't see it. Michigan, that's a loss, in my opinion. Ohio State, that's a loss. You saw what Penn State was able to do against Ohio State in Happy Valley, which is, Mike, did you guys see the atmosphere out in Happy Valley this past weekend? I mean, I would argue, and I agree with Coach Franklin, I would argue for you to find another fan base that is that insane during a night game than that whiteout that you saw on Saturday night against the Buckeyes. I mean, that was absolutely fantastic. They stormed the field as well. I don't see MSU beating Penn State. You got to win against Illinois on the road, and you got to win at home against Rutgers. That still doesn't get you there. I don't think Michigan State's getting to a bowl game. I just don't. I don't know where MSU is going to get number 6 at. I just don't see it. And you play a U of M team where Wilton Spate, I think, is getting better by the week. The staple of a Jim Harbaugh team. Jim Harbaugh does wonders when it comes to quarterbacks. And it's been pretty cool to see Wilton Spate. If you compare the tape at the very beginning of the year to what Wilton Spate is right now, the kid has gotten better. I mean, he's so poised. He's so confident. He's got a great arm. His instincts in the pocket are fantastic. I love watching Wilton Spate play. He's getting better, and that's scary. We're talking 253 on 16 completions against Illinois. Fantastic. In this defense, this is the thing. That Michigan defense is so good, playing so well right now. The Michigan defense leads the nation in scoring defense, only giving up on average 10.3 points per game. And of course, Michigan is leading the nation in total defense. Through 4 Big Ten games, they have only allowed a combined 25 points. Folks, it could get ugly on Saturday afternoon at Spartan Stadium. If there is a weakness, and I stood back and said to myself, if there is a weakness for this team, I think that Michigan can get better at special teams, but I'm grasping at straws here. They could get better at special teams play. And if Michigan State is going to have any chance against the Wolverines this weekend, they got to contain the run game, guys like Davion Smith and Chris Evans. And why not put pressure on Spate, though? Even though I think Spate has gotten better week after week after week in the college football year, the only way the Spartans have a remote chance of winning this game is if you make Wilton Spate beat you with his arm. Only way I see Michigan State making this thing competitive. And you know what really got me, though? You guys heard that montage at the very beginning of the show. And you heard the last quote from Mark D'Antonio. That tone and that aura is something that I have not heard from Coach D'Antonio in a while. And what I mean by that is Mark D'Antonio wasn't talking about beating Michigan when he talked about the Wolverines in that snippet. He spoke from an attitude of just being competitive in the game. And it's a reserved sort of emotion that we're seeing from Mark D'Antonio, because I think he realizes now that nothing is given. Heck, nothing is given when you lose 5 straight games, folks. He realizes that right now he doesn't know where his football team is. And that's something that is so, so rare. So that's my spiel. Before we get our first break, I want to get to one of our callers here on line 1, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. We have Mike from Saginaw on the line. Mike, how you doing?
How you doing there, Elmire? And I want to talk to you about Drew Sharp, to me, as I met him, listened to him when he was picking the Big Ten picks. And I just thought about, and when it hit me, I was listening to another talk show, and he said he passed on, And I said, wow, Drew Sharp. And I thought about all the people that really passed on this year, like John Saunders and, you know, I mean, it's something about these guys in their middle ages. They're not living that much longer than they used to. I mean, I'm just kind of, you know, he's a writer, yes. He cares. You might agree with him or disagree with him in his views, but he's a human being first. And, you know, it's kind of just stunning that to hear something like that. You know, what's your opinion on that?
Yeah, very stunning. And actually, Mike, on Friday's show, we gave a tribute to Drew Sharp throughout the entire hour, and we had Chris Solari, of the formerly of the Lansing State Journal, now with the Detroit Free Press. Chris called in and gave his thoughts on the death of Drew Sharp. And I had told the story of how the day previously I had seen Drew. I saw him. He looked totally fine. He was at Michigan State Men's Basketball Media Day. He looked fine. He was joking with other reporters who attended Media Day. And, you know, he's always had a heart condition his entire year. It's one of the things that hindered him from actually participating in sports growing up. And He went to sleep that night and never woke up, victim of a heart attack. So it just stunning, just really stunning. You gotta appreciate life every time you wake up, Mike.
Yes, we do. I want to comment on all the Michigan State's season. I mean, do you think that sometimes Texas going through this, and Notre Dame going through this, Oregon's going through this? Do you think you can get so high and get on top and that is bound to happen, that you can get below 500. I'm thinking about, well, Alabama, they on top of things, and Nick Saban. But, I mean, just in this day and age, that it can happen to all programs, regardless of how big and powerful they is. Even USC went to a stretch where they were losing. They had a bad record like that. I can name probably any power school.
I think it depends on the program. I think it depends on the program, Mike. And also, I think that the degree in which that fall off happens varies as well. I mean, you know, you may see a dip off from a program who may have gotten very close to, you know, having a great run at the end of a postseason. You may see a dip off the following year, maybe of two games losing or three games losing. But nobody could have predicted that a team that went to the college football playoff the following year would lose five straight games, Mike. So I think it varies. It depends on the program. It depends on, you know, how great recruiting has been in recent years. There's a lot of factors that weigh in here, Mike.
What about, I called you up last year and I was talking about all these teams in the American Athletic Conference, like Temple, and they was undefeated. And what else I used to say about some of those teams that was Pittsburgh, was having a good season, Houston, teams like that. But it's Cincinnati every now and then, Louisville, you know, even though they're not a part of that conference anymore, or Memphis or some school like that. What is the difference now? Because it seems like more schools want to get in Division One. The teams that want to be in the FCS, they want to go to Division One, and it's like they're building all kind of facilities now for football. You know how they're building the indoor football facilities, the weight room.
Yeah, yeah.
The camp, the facilities where the students can come in and relax and get tutoring for their classes and everything. Do you think a university, even Nebraska they was up for a long time and they went down. Do you think the competition is leveling itself out, or it's just that the quality of play is not getting any better? I'll let you move on to other callers and listen to you off the air. Thanks for letting me call.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate that. And I think that comes down to one word: recruiting. And the recruiting classes of – and this is the thing about Michigan State, though, that point I want to make when it comes to recruiting. And I posed this question the last 2 weeks here on the show. How does a year like this hurt the overall brand recruiting-wise for Michigan State football? Because let's be real here. I'm a guy who keeps it 100. When you have a year like this, when you hit the recruiting trail and these kids see what occurred the year after a college football playoff in which you lost five straight games and possibly more here, we're still in the middle of the year here, it's going to hurt. This is going to hurt Mark D'Antonio on the recruiting trail, I believe. And how do you repair that brand? The only way to repair it is to go out there and win. Simple as that. But from a perception standpoint, and Michigan State thrives off the perception of being the underdog, of being the overlooked team. And if you want to stay in the conversation of the elite, you can't have a dip off like this because it is so glaring. It is so, so glaring. So I think when it comes to the overall consistency of a program, it comes down to how quickly you can develop your young players. And if your recruiting classes have been up to par in recent years, which I think Michigan State's has, but they've had so many injuries. It's been unfair to have this conversation when discussing MSU this year because they've had so many different injuries and had to burn the red shirts of so many different freshmen that it's a bit unfair to expect them to be lights out automatically when they come in to replace those heralded upperclassmen. It's at our first break. When we come back, we will continue to take your calls on what's wrong with the MSU football team. We will also talk about the Detroit Lions, who are winners of three straight games. And we will invite live here in our WKAR Current Sports Studios, Jason Ruff, beat reporter and host at Impact 89 FM and commentator for the Big Ten Network Student U. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Again, we are continuing to take your comments, calls. You can weigh in via social media, facebook.com/currentsports. You can even tweet us at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR underscore sports. Call in 517-355-WKAR. We are chatting about what is wrong with the Michigan State football team. I guess the real question should be here is, what is right? What is positive about this team right now? It's really hard to pick an area and say, yeah, this is they can build on this. It's really hard to pick an area and really speak of it very highly when discussing Spartan football right now. We're also going to be chatting about the Detroit Lions, who came off an incredible comeback win, another one, for three straight weeks now, in which Matthew Stafford has led his team to a game-winning drive. Stafford as a whole has 24 game-winning drives in his career. Unbelievable. Matthew Stafford is playing great right now. Before I move forward here, because we want to talk some MSU hockey with Jason Ruff, former Current Sports Production Assistant now with Impact 89 FM, and as well as the Big Ten Network Student U. We're also going to invite our hockey head for this semester, Cayman Kessler, who's also a fantastic PA for us. But I want to get the brief comments and thoughts from our Current Sports engineer, Isaac Constance, on the Michigan State football team. Isaac, surprised? We both actually chose Michigan State to lose this game on Friday afternoon.
Well, what I'm going to do is I'm not going to talk about the game because we've talked about it too much already. Going to call the Michigan-Michigan State game, which will be 45-7 in favor of Michigan. That's just how it goes. There's not much hope for this team. There's not much optimism. There's not anybody you've plugged in the different quarterbacks. You've taken up a different running scheme. The defense has cycled through rows and rows of players. And the fact is, this team, I said earlier this year, then I second-guessed myself, and I'll say it again, I think it's fair to say it. They're just not as talented as teams in the past. I'm not sure how many ways you can parse it up, but the thing is, this team cannot win under any circumstance right now. Like, after my report against the Maryland game, I wasn't sure if they could win at a Turtles pace. Sure enough, the game was slower moving this time around. Maryland had two drives of 90-plus yards in a relatively low-scoring affair, and this team just showed absolutely no resistance whatsoever. Mark D'Antonio, I think he's absolutely right to temper the emotions and temper the expectations for this team, because there's no reason I see any optimism. And, you know, I don't think it's worth talking about the playoffs anymore. I think it's talking about if this team can get to four games. Because, personally, I'm not sure if they will.
That's a failure even if they get to four games. To go
of
here,
course it's a failure.
You got to make a bowl game. Simple as that. You can't have a drop. I would counter your argument, Isaac, by saying this. It's a bit unfair that Michigan State had all these injuries, though, this year.
Well, and I agree.
You have so many young pups. Again, we saw nine true freshmen who are still wet behind the ears as a Spartan have to come in and make something happen and translate to wins off that, it's a bit unfair to expect them to be lights out coming into the game. You have nine of them?
You're exactly
right. That's a lot of inexperience,
Isaac. Well, and what I've said throughout is, including the players who are on the field in that category, is not talented enough. And you can throw in just yet after mm-hmm. that phrase, just yet, because they will be good down the line. But the thing is, you're right. This throws away, in my opinion, one good recruiting class, because the fact is, MSU doesn't have the name recognition of a Michigan, Ohio State, Notre Dame, could go on. The thing is, they needed to get to that point sooner or later. It's not to say that they still can't, but this throws a hitch in the road. And this recruiting class that's upcoming, they won't be as highly touted as the one that was coming in this year.
And I will say, though, the true freshies that we are seeing right now, looking at the glasses half full, this experience is going to be good for them. This is fantastic because they're
Absolutely.
Getting reps. They're getting reps out there. They're starting. They're playing games and playing high minutes. And they are going to remember this bad taste in their mouths. You better believe that. Mark D'Antonio talks all the time. Well, he talks a lot this year about the young guys on this team being, quote unquote, born on third base. They don't know what it's like to go to first and second. You know, they don't know what that grind is like. There's levels to this. It's still a line from Drake, right? So they're realizing
that's
that
is Meek Mill, first off.
Oh, yeah, it is Meek Mill. I'm sorry. Yeah. Meek Mill. My bad. Look at me, man. I'm mixing up my hip-hop right now. But they don't know what it's like. They don't know what that grind is like. And now they're starting to see that it's not always lollipops and rainbows for Michigan State. There has to be certain steps you take if you want to be considered one of the elite programs in the nation. So call in, folks, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. The Michigan State hockey team has begun the year 0-4, coming off a weekend sweep at the hands of the number 6 team in the nation, Denver. But wins and losses don't really tell the entire story. In the final game of the doubleheader, Michigan State on Saturday would lose 3-1. But the Spartans show great effort. After allowing 2 goals in the first period, MSU did hold the Pioneers scoreless most of the rest of the way until an empty netter scored with just over a minute left to play. But again, at that point, you're in desperation mode, all right? So to give a brief synopsis on what has taken place this year in MSU hockey, still a lot of hockey left to play, folks. We're just talking about 4 games here. But we now welcome to our studios former current sports production assistant Jason Ruff, now beat reporter and host at Impact 89 FM, and color commentator for the Big Ten Network, Student U, as well as our very own PA for this semester, who is a hockey nut, folks, Kamen Kessler. Jason and Kamen, welcome to Current Sports. How you guys doing, first off?
I'm doing good, Al. Thanks for having me back. It's like a nice big homecoming. I'm missing across from you, man.
Oh, it's always good seeing your face, Jason. Kamen, how you doing, my man?
Oh, I'm doing great, and you know I had to be on if there was hockey being talked.
Without a doubt. Well, we'll start with you, Jason, right now. I want to talk about the 0-4 start for Michigan State hockey, specifically as it pertains to their latest series against the Pioneers, against Denver, a team that is the number 6 hockey team in the entire nation. Great fight in that final game, I must say. How would you characterize the effort from Michigan State this weekend?
I would characterize the effort of Michigan State as an A. You know, they're coming off a series where they got totally dominated by Lake Superior State. Lake Superior State's currently still undefeated, so maybe they'll pan out to be a really good team. But there were a lot of questions of where this program was going to go, where this team was going to go. People were already writing them off after the first week. Mm-hmm. And I said on my radio show, unless this team shows us that they can play with these top teams, they're not going to be able to beat them. They come out Friday night, Al. They really took it to Denver. They showed Denver that they were not afraid of them. Mm-hmm. And it was really encouraging to watch. Both nights, Michigan State on Friday and Saturday, Michigan State got down 2-0. And I watched and I said, all right, is this team going to curl up and fold like they did last year? Because you look back, plenty of games, plenty of examples. Opponent gets 2 or 3 goal lead, they just curl up and die. Michigan State fought back, made it close game late both nights. They didn't win, but they showed a lot of effort. This team is more mentally tough than last year. And that's saying something because, like Michigan State's football team, they're playing a lot of freshmen, 10 freshmen on this team.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, Jason, this is a very young team this year. You have a freshie goaltender in John Letheman. He received the start over the weekend. I got to know right now, when it comes to that goaltending position with John starting, is he the guy moving forward?
I don't think so. Ed Minnie started the first night on Friday. He looked very good. It was a great bounce back game for him. Stopped 24, 26 shots.
So this is still an open competition right now.
I think it should be. I think it is, but I don't think it should be, to go back on what I just said. I think I was kind of surprised that Tom Nassis went with Levenman, who in his collegiate debut let up 4 goals in the first period. Levenman looked a little rocky at first, kind of settled in the game, but I really thought Ed Mini should have been given the start on Saturday to really cement his position as a starter. I think personally Ed Mini will be the starter moving forward because none of those 2 goals that he let up on Friday, none of those were his fault. I mean, you will back me up on this. The first goal was scored by an NHL first rounder, and it was a goal that not even half the goaltenders in the NHL could stop. Uh-huh. And the second one, he was screened by his own defenseman.
Came in.
To give you an idea on that first one,
go ahead.
As a goaltender, Minnie's a big guy, 6'5". He went down, had maybe 2 inches between his shoulder and the crossbar, and that puck went between his shoulder and the crossbar. That's where that shot went from the first-round pick.
Like
of the Florida Panthers.
It's like you put it into a hole like this. Mm-hmm. Not even as big as your
iPhone.
It
was an impressive shot. And I thought,
talking inches here. Then, inches,
yeah, and I thought Minnie was really impressive on Friday night. I know they split the starts the opening weekend. I wasn't sure they were going to do that again, especially after Lethman had kind of a really shaky start to his career. It was nice to see him have a good game on Saturday and get a confidence boost going forward, but I agree with Jason. I thought Minnie probably should have had a start, and it should be his job going forward. Obviously, more experience, and from what I've seen, I think the better goalie at this time.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Big Ten play doesn't start until December, right?
Correct.
So when do you put that cutoff period, do you think, to solidify who your starting goaltender is for the remainder of the season? I'll start with Jason, then you can weigh in.
I think you go with the GLI. I think you give each goaltender a little bit of chance to taste some Big Ten play because I believe Michigan State has 2 Big Ten series before the GLI, the Great Lakes Invitational Tournament. But I think by the GLI, you have to have your starting goaltender solidified. And I think it will be Ed Mini. Ed Mini just looks more comfortable at this level. Levenman, he's a true freshman goaltender. I mean, he has good potential. He just looks a little out of place.
Do you believe in that same cutoff period, Kamen?
Yeah, I think you've got to give both 3 or 4 games to try and prove themselves. But what we've seen so far is that, kind of echoing what Jason said, Minnie looks way more comfortable on the net. He doesn't look to have quite as shaky starts as Lethman did on Saturday. He's just more experienced, and I think he should be the goalie moving forward.
Spartans couldn't take advantage of 6 power plays on Saturday. 0 goals in 12 penalty minutes, Jason. This has been a problem in recent history. How big of a concern is it moving forward?
It's a very big concern because, honestly, Al, if Michigan State last weekend could capitalize on some of those power plays, they capitalized on one on Friday, but if they capitalize on one Saturday, they tie that game.
Mm-hmm.
If Michigan State had 5 more minutes on Friday night, they probably win that game because Denver was on their heels. I think this power play, if they can find some way to get this power play finally unlocked, then that could open up a huge amount of scoring for them. But here's the problem. Michigan State, on the power play, they're looking for that perfect setup opportunity, which is fine, but you have to have all your players moving around the ice, getting mismatches, getting open. They're not. They're just standing around. And if you're going to play a power play where you're just standing around, you need to take that first opportunity to shoot the puck and get on net and have like 2 or 3 guys crashing that net for a rebound.
What do you see the problem with the power play is, Kamen?
I think the biggest problem is when they're trying to get it set up in the zone. And that's really because they don't have a clear-cut quarterback on it.
Mm-hmm.
So when they're trying to get into the zone, they have a mixture of dump and chase and trying to carry it in. They don't really know who they're trying to get it to set it up. And I think the biggest struggle I saw against Denver was they were losing the puck in the neutral zone a lot. I think Troy Terry, the fantastic forward from Denver, almost had 3 breakaways on Michigan State power plays on Saturday. He had one that Lethman made a great save on. The other 2 bounced over a stick that they just didn't know where they were going with the puck in the neutral zone. They couldn't get it into the zone to set up a power play.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Anasis needs to really solidify one guy as the quarterback of both power units and have him preferably be maybe a senior on the team, allow for a setup or something, because they looked lost trying to get through the neutral zone to get the puck into the zone, even set it up. They weren't generating chance. They had 3 chances in the second period of that game on Saturday. They didn't get a shot for the first 15 minutes of the second period.
Very alarming stuff there. And going back to the youth briefly here, 4 of 6 defensemen for Michigan State were underclassmen on Saturday. Sophomore Mason Appleton, the top returner for MSU. How does Tom combat youth this year? And at what point can you realistically expect the growing pains to ideally subside or even stop? Jason?
Well, I don't think the growing pains are going to subside totally. I think they'll gradually get lower and lower because this, while it is a very young class, it's a very skilled class. I mean, this is arguably the best class Tom Nass has brought in during his 6 years at Michigan State.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking to how Coach Anastas combats that youth, I think he said it best. He needs to limit playing time to some individuals. I think one of the things, if you ask him about last year, thing he wanted to avoid but was kind of forced into, he played freshmen too much and they hit a wall. Because eventually, all these freshmen, they're going to hit some kind of wall if they're relied upon too much. You need you want to maximize their output but minimize their potential to hit that mental barrier or to make mistakes.
But it's hard to limit minutes when most of your team is freshmen.
Yeah, it's very hard. It's very hard to do. So you got to identify the freshmen who are going to move forward and be those point leaders, guys like Appleton. You're going to be really leaning on your sophomores here, I think, and your redshirt freshmen too, because Jared Rosberg's a redshirt freshman, but he has some pretty good skill. I've been very impressed with him. But you're going to have to lean on your upperclassmen a lot, and that's really another thing where I thought Michigan State really fell short of last year. Their upperclassmen did not have their best year, and they did not lead from the front.
Folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with Jason Ruff, former Current Sports PA, now beat reporter and host at Impact 89 FM, as well as commentator for the Big Ten Network, Student U. We also have joining us to the show, production assistant for this semester, Kamen Kessler, here on Current Sports. All right, who's the most impressive out of the young pups? We'll start with Kamen this time.
I've been really impressed with Logan Lambden, and he's gotten some good minutes on the top line. Obviously, the goals and points haven't come yet, but when there's a player who's, you know, leading the rush or making a big play or creating a chance, it always seems to be coming off of Lambden's stick. So he's been the most impressive to me so far. And on the back end, I've been pretty impressed with Rosberg.
I'm going to go with two here, and they're both on the same line. Freshman Tar Hirose from Calgary, Alberta, and Patrick Kotarenko from Walnut Creek, California. Those two guys are on a line here. Those guys are starting to develop some chemistry, with Hirose being able to find Kotarenko, because Appleton's on the same line. But that line's going to be good. If you look at Hirose's stat lines when he played in the British Columbia Hockey League, he had over 50 points in both seasons. Most of those are assists. So he's a prime setup guy. He has good skill set too. And Appleton, of course, he's a natural. Or not Appleton, Kotarenko. Both those guys, Appleton and Kotarenko, are natural finishers. So those are the two freshmen that I've really been impressed with so far. And, of course, Jared Rosberg, redshirt freshman, missed all of last season because he had to have corrective surgery. He's come back and he hasn't looked like he's missed much of a beat, honestly.
Final question for the both of you. We're short on time here, but 10-23. And four last year. MSU is picked to finish last in the 16 Big Ten preseason conference poll. How accurate is that assessment, and how do you think they finished, Jason?
I think now, in retrospect, I think it's actually a fairly accurate statement, because you look at all Big Ten's rising this year. Ohio State's undefeated. They're a very veteran team. Minnesota dropped off a little bit this weekend. They got swept, but they're still always a talented team. Michigan, I have no clue what to make of Michigan yet. Four games, they've played three different goaltenders. Wisconsin looks like they're surging under their new coaching staff. And Penn State, they went on the road to number three Notre Dame, tied, and then beat the Irish.
Impressive.
So the Big Ten's looking impressive. I think, honestly, that's a fairly accurate statement, unless Michigan State improves exponentially, which that is still a possibility, Al.
Kamen, fair or foul, Michigan State finishes last in the Big Ten this year?
I think it's a fair assessment. I think they have the possibility of moving up a spot or two, stealing some games. This team looks much more formidable on the defensive end this weekend than the opening weekend. If they play a style like that and they find some scoring out of the youth, they can maybe take some Big Ten games and maybe finish second to last.
Okay. Well, Princeton comes to town on Friday, and I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, gents, Princeton opens up the year?
Yes.
This Friday? How does that happen?
These Ivy League schools, man.
Okay, they beat to their own drum, right?
Right.
All right, Princeton opens up the year on the road this Friday at Munn Ice Arena. Really looking forward to that one. Kamen Kessler, Jason Ruff, thank you so much, guys. Fantastic stuff.
Thank you, Al.
Thank you.
Last break. When we come back, we will chat about the Detroit Lions. That's right. The Lions are roaring with an impressive three-game win streak. Come on back.
Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. My oh my, time flies when you're having fun. We just have 4 minutes left here in the show, and you guys know we love to close out each and every Monday edition of Current Sports by hitting you with weekend winners. So who exactly had the best weekend in all of sports? Well, I do know a few candidates for that. Let's start it up.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. And nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down.
All right, so who exactly had the best weekend in the sporting world? Well, Top Dog clearly has to go to the Detroit Lions. Are you kidding me? Three straight dubs. Matthew Stafford, three straight times, has led his team to last-minute heroics, putting on that Superman cape, folks. Matty Staff now has 24 game-winning drives, playing the best football of his career. His name is even being mentioned in NFL MVP buzz talk. And I wouldn't argue against that, folks. What he is doing right now is amazing. I mean, you have Kirk Cousins, former Michigan State quarterback. It looked like he was going to be the life of the party, right? He puts it on the ground, runs in for that touchdown. He's got all his family and friends at the end of the during the game, and boom, Matthew Stafford ruins that entire party. Absolutely love that. And big ups to the Lions defense as well, because the stats may not show it, but they had some pretty timely stops. And big shout out to our 21 Lansing area teams that have made their playoff dreams come true. Even 3-5-4 teams in Willie, Olivet, and Stockbridge. Brief call here. We're going to give Ray from Indiana 30 seconds. I know, Ray, we're short on time, man, but I want to hear from you. Ray, how you doing?
Hey, my Indians made it to the World Series, and so did the Cubs. I love underdogs. 108 years for the Cubs, 68 years for the Indians. I'm hoping for an Indians a World Championship, but if they don't win, I won't be hurt as much because the Cubs have been waiting longer. I just want for a great 7-game World Series.
I love it. Ray, thank you so much, and that is a great segue. I didn't plan this, folks. That goes into my last weekend winner. How can you choose anybody other than the Chicago Cubs, right? It's been 108 years. They finally make that dream come true. Game one tomorrow night. Isaac, briefly.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm not sure about the best team in terms of the world weekend winners for the Detroit Lions. That would have to go to the Timbuktu Pirates. No, I'm just kidding about that one. But my weekend winner would have to be actually Penn State. James Franklin on the hot seat heading into this year. This is a statement program victory. And Penn State, for the first time after those accusations and the wrongdoings of Jerry Sandusky, back on track and one of the best college football programs in the Big Ten.
I think they're turning the page now. I really do.
They are.
All right. Thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in to this edition of Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870. Ashley Gibbert, Jason Ruff, Kamen Kessler, Isaac Constance, thanks so much, guys. Really appreciate the help. We'll be back at it same time, same place tomorrow. Be easy, people.